This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Just My Archetype. When I was 14, you know, I was a bit of a nerdy 14-year-old going through high school. I was stressed out all the time. I really wanted to do well in school. I obsessively did homework. You know, my social skills were a little bit meh. And at 14, I found a show. I found Survivor. And the first season I ever watched of Survivor was Survivor Cook Islands. 14-year-old me is truly giddy at today's guest on Just My Archetype. Please welcome to the show someone who, you know, 14-year-old me was probably a little in love with. So, you know, 15, you know, years later, I finally get to sit down and have a full conversation recorded just for you. Please welcome to the podcast, Ozzy. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you being here. I was thinking about what your archetype would be. I think when I initially emailed you, I went with Hot Nature Man. But then I thought, you know what? Let's just call it the Aussie archetype because you kind of pioneered this archetype. Do you agree with that? Do you think that you are like the originator of many other people that would be cast later?
I mean, now that you mention it, and now that I've sort of gone back to just imagine how I come across as a character on the show, I would have to say, yeah, I think that the previous 12 seasons, there wasn't anyone who quite did the things that I did every single time that I played. And, you know, I think that it feels really kind of cool to have made such a mark on Survivor in that way.
Yeah, I feel like so many men who go out there who, you know, fish and are, you know, good at the challenges, they're initially compared to you, whether that's Malcolm or Joe or whatever other iterations come. It's always like, this could be the next Aussie.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really weird to have that. I mean, it's almost embarrassing to me that there are so many other like man bun dudes that are in the shadow of my 24-year-old self.
It's wild. If we rewind, how did you find Survivor? Did they find you? Like, what was that process of finding the show back in 2004?
Well, it's really not that good of a story, honestly. I mean, it kind of is in a way. Like, I had just moved to Los Angeles. I was living in a garage in the Venice Canals, and I had a roommate at the time that was this really good looking Mexican kid. We're both Mexican. We actually used to tell people that we would run into at parties and stuff that we were cousins because we just were so similar. And he actually got recruited was one of the casting agents at CBS. She saw him at a restaurant and approached him to be on The Amazing Race because he was eating with one of our friends, this beautiful girl. And they weren't together, so that didn't work out. But it was like, hey, you know, I also cast for Survivor. Is that something you'd be interested in? And Alex, who is my, we'll just call him my quotation cousin, he decided he, you know, didn't want to do Survivor. He was a male model, and his agents told him that, you know, probably wasn't a good idea for his modeling career because of the way that, you know, you have to sign non-competes and, you know, you're kind of like, for at least a year or so after CBS kind of owns you. So he decided not to do it. And because I was his roommate at the time, you know, both of us living in a garage and in Los Angeles, trying to get our feet up under us, you know, working crappy jobs. I got a call from saying, "Hey, you know, your cousin told us that you would be interested in maybe being on the show." The funny thing was, it was like, I had one day, it was like right at the end of the casting process. I had one day to make a video. And so I mishmashed some stuff together and sent it in and had a conversation. And then literally like 3 or 4 days later, I went to the casting finals with all of the contenders and met Mark Burnett, Jeff Probst, and all the producers who were working on the show at the time. And it was a super long process. Well, not super long. It was like a week being holed up in the hotel, which was actually really, really fun because you could order a room service and it was super cool. But at that time, the casting agents kind of knew that I didn't really watch that much TV. I knew what Survivor was, obviously. But they lent me tons of DVDs, you know, that had all of these different seasons on it. So I was binge watching Survivor while I was trying to come up with my, you know, my best spiel to give the producers to get me on the show. Because, I mean, I've always been interested in spearfishing and being in the jungle. And, you know, I've always told people that one of my first books that I ever read that made an influence on me was Robinson Crusoe. I always had this dream of wanting to be stranded on a deserted island. And, you know, I just never really pursued it because that's a really crazy dream to have. But then sure enough, within a few weeks, I was flying out to the Cook Islands and the rest is history.
The rest is history, but this almost was a podcast with your quote unquote cousin. History could have been very different. Alex could have been the one on this podcast, just my archetype, my 14-year-old self would have been introduced to Alex, your cousin. It would have been a whole different thing.
I mean, who knows? Maybe Trump would still be president.
Maybe Trump would have never been president.
Maybe the world would have ended, or maybe we'd be in a much better place. These are the things that we will never know.
Yeah, I always find it funny when Probst is obsessed with regret. Like, he has such a hard one for, like, do you regret everything because you made this mistake on this show that I am, like, the or like conductor of? But I always think it's so silly because if you step on a leaf, everything's different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every single, you know, if you're into the theory that there's infinite dimensions, then every single moment, there's splits in the dimensions. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, yeah, there's regret, but at the same time, the people that live in the past are, you know, they're not doing themselves justice at all.
No, it's not a happy place to be, but we're not in the dimension where Alex is the Alex archetype. So I have to ask, it's weird to me when I say, like, I mean, it's not weird that I started with Cook Islands and loved it. It was obviously a great Survivor season that produced so many good characters that would have long, quote unquote, like Survivor careers. But it was a season, because it wasn't in 2021, split by race.
Yeah.
When you were being cast, did you pick up on the fact that this might be a race season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they were pretty, at least the casting agent, really, she was really, she made it very obvious that the thing that I had going for me is that I was non-stereotypical, whatever that means, non-stereotypical Latino man, Latino kid, Latino Mexican guy. You know, I think that in the United States, a lot of people think of Mexicans a certain way, unfortunately. And so she was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, you surf, you skate, you have this sort of like, you look like, you know, you could be from lots of different cultures, and let's play that up. Make sure that you're really, and it wasn't hard for me to do because that's exactly who I am. I'm somebody that loves to surf and skateboard, and California has sort of like become my, when I moved here when I was 13, became my home, and I really wanted to enjoy every single part of that. So she just made sure that that was something that came across to the producers, that I was this like certain type of guy. And I didn't think at the time that it had anything to do with anything. She just said, hey, I'm looking for this non-stereotypical Latin guy. And, you know, I think that that was pretty perfect for me.
Because it was so long ago, like, did you have a reaction to it being a race split? For those listening who maybe are not familiar, it was split into four tribes.
Yeah.
A Latin tribe, a Black tribe, a White tribe, and an Asian tribe.
Yeah.
Did you have some sort of initial, because I don't know, if I had been put on a tribe and they were like, you are the Jewish tribe.
Yeah.
I guess it would have been, you know, obviously white, but like, I would probably have some feelings about that.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I was a little bit, at the time, I was like, wow, that's interesting that they're doing that. And then I was like, okay, I got a pretty good tribe, you know? I got me and JP that were like, I think, pretty strong. And Cecilia and Christina, which were also pretty strong. And then Billy, who was, you know, a big fan of the show, but, you know, maybe not the like strongest physical player. So I was pretty proud of my tribe for the most part. I mean, I guess I was actually, I take that back. I was a little bit ashamed of my tribe because Billy was just not that, it wasn't that athletic. And, he was like this death metal, you know, guitarist or bassist. And he, you know, he didn't perform very well in challenges, although we as a whole, we performed very well. And then Christina was a cop. And I was like, I just remember being like, oh my God, I have a cop on my tribe. What the hell am I going to do? Because I just, ever since I've been little, I've just always been super suspicious of the police. And they've never helped me out. They've only done bad things in my life. So, I just was like, this is a little bit scary. I hope. And I didn't know Survivor enough. Like I've been binge watching. So I didn't realize that I wasn't going to be stuck with these people for that long, that things were going to get mixed up. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about it that way. I wasn't like able to say, I wasn't like an Eliza who's like, okay, it's day six. Like we're going to get mixed up, or, you know, and then we're going to get mixed up again. Like, there's people now that are so good at it. They count the days and they know almost exactly the formula that Survivor uses. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like by the time I did the show, most of my initial tribe knew what was happening, like even to the point where they were guess what types of challenges were coming based on what had happened in the past. Because you have the unique position of you played in an earlier season, and then because you played in Game Changers in 2016, you've gotten to play both types of seasons. Is there like, do you feel the difference of like what it's like playing when the show was first starting out, you know, those first, you know, the 14th season of the show versus the 34th season of the show?
Yeah. For me, it was pretty apparent. At least in Game Changers, it was so much more difficult to find idols. There were so many more advantages. They were like hiding, you know, there was advantages hidden at challenges. There was just stuff that I was not ready for. I was not prepared for the voting blocks. The like, you know, it morphed into a different game that I wasn't really, I was kind of used to playing it in a different way. Part of that was like South Pacific was still a little bit wonky because of the, you know, because of Redemption Island, that kind of threw, it was a little bit of a funny twist, but yeah, I mean, I think that the smartest thing that the producers do is mix it up as much as possible, because you can't keep doing these formulaic things, because, you know, there's students at the games, and there's so much of a history, you go back and you go watch 40 seasons, you can really kind of like, you know, you like you said, when you played, like you could really like get a sense for what's coming down the pipe. So I'm happy that it's evolving and I'm happy that it's changing. And sometimes it's not the easiest when you're an older person or at least somebody who's played so many times to like be able to change your game up for that.
Well, I have to ask, like, that, like, I see clips of Survivor people back in the day going on late night talk shows and all this stuff. Do you feel like the reception afterwards felt different? Not that people who play Survivor today don't experience, like, you know, the 2 seconds of hot fame, but like, do you feel like there was just a different cultural thing when you first played?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely was like, part of it was there was a lot more. I think that the excitement around playing Survivor or the contestants coming off Survivor, it started to really wane a little bit. It started to die down. I mean, I know Cecilia, who is on my tribe, she ended up going on David Letterman, and it was a quick.
That's what I mean.
It was a quick.
It was like.
Yeah. It was a super quick segment. Like she didn't actually meet David Letterman. They did this funny thing where David Letterman had like one of his people like interviewing her somewhere else. And so I think that was like a good sign that like she didn't sit down with David Letterman. She was like being interviewed sort of by him via this like intermediary, which was odd. So yeah, I think that it was like, it was kind of starting to wane a little bit, but then just the sort of flip side of that whole thing is Survivor, I think, went through like a period of decline, you know, in terms of viewership and stuff. But I think in the last year or so, you know, with the season 40 and then with the pandemic happening, there's been a massive.
People are rewatching this.
Yeah.
I get messages now similar to when I was on 5 years ago being like, I'm rooting for you. Or like, I just watched your season. I get messages from like high school people I knew in high school being like, I didn't watch the first time, but I'm so into Survivor now. And like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
It's wild.
It really
is. So many more messages.
Yeah. It's funny. No, I was just going to say, like, I agree with you 100%. I was just at the, you know, eating today and I had three different people come up to me. And they were just people that like definitely hadn't watched Survivor when it was on TV, but they went back. They've gone back over the last year because it's just people are just exhausting all avenues of entertainment. And
it's escapism too.
For sure.
I mean, let's be frank. Survivor is it's not for me anymore. And I'm sure, I don't know about you, but there's too much drama associated with it to be escapism for me.
Yeah.
But initially when I was 14 and I was like having trouble making friends, I turned on Survivor and I was like, Aussie's fishing, Parvati's flirting. Like that was my introduction. It was just pure escapism. So it makes sense when there's a world pandemic that like people want to escape. That makes perfect sense to me why people have rewatched Survivor.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's actually been for me, it's been a great thing. And it's kept me afloat this whole entire pandemic because I stopped working in my restaurant and that whole thing ended, but you know, Survivor's really been able to keep me going. So I'm nothing.
Well, it's nice that people are going up to you. Zeke and I were in an Orange Theory recently, and a girl came up to us after, and I was like, "This is so." Although when Zeke and I are together, we're both like kind of not in a mean way, but we're like funny looking enough that if you think it's us, it's probably us.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I'm with Zeke, it's like, yeah, that's definitely Zeke and Hannah from the show.
Totally.
So like the first time you played, obviously, like. Jeff Probst and the show are discovering what you can do, right? Like you can climb a tree, you can do all this stuff. And it's probably a more natural discovery. Do you feel like every time you came back, there was like pressure or things were pointed to be like, be the Aussie archetype, like be this very popular character you were for us? Cause I've never returned. So I don't know what that experience is like.
Yeah. The two times I came back, Game Changers was different, but fans versus favorites and South Pacific, for sure. There was, I wanted to be that. I wanted to be my character. I wanted to play better and more like myself than I, because I was still finding myself in Cook Islands. Like, I didn't know who I was, really. I was just like, okay, I'm going to go.
You were 24?
Yeah.
You were 24?
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to go fishing. Okay. Oh, wow. I guess I can climb a coconut tree. Yeah, I can climb a coconut tree. That was a discovery. Like, I didn't know I could do it. I didn't really even know that I could fish. I just happened to be good at it. And it's just something that I proceeded to over the course of those 39 days, get better and better and better. Same with climbing a tree, coconut tree. Like, the first time I did it, I could barely climb up there. I was like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just was like, oh, okay. So fast forward a couple seasons, and then Game Changers comes around, and I realized in Game Changers that I needed to, like, maybe not be as Aussie, not be as much of myself as I was in the past. And you know, I honestly think that probably hurt me. Like, I think I should have just kept doing what I was doing the way that I was doing it. I think I was trying to play a different kind of game. Little side note is I had a bad omen going out on Game Changers because the previous season, the season that Zeke was on, Gen X versus Millennials.
I'm familiar with that season.
Yeah. So there was, you know, you guys had the whatever, Cyclone, Winston.
Cyclone, yeah.
Came through and literally took all the coconuts away. So none of the trees had coconuts anymore. We show up to play, and I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm like, yeah, I get to climb coconut trees. Not a coconut tree anywhere on any tree, any of the islands, anywhere.
We also, like, destroyed some of those beaches. We shit everywhere. Production yelled at us because there was fake. They were like, you guys, you have to designate a spot. We keep stepping in your shit.
Yeah, well, what the hell? Why are you guys shitting on land anyways? That's what I wanted.
We were really young. We were millennials.
Yeah, like
I don't know. A couple people aqua dumped, but
we got yelled at. The best.
People were shitting everywhere. That's all. All I know is that we were the first ones in Fiji since Survivor had gone to Fiji originally.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, Survivor never left Fiji, but we were the first to, like, enter Fiji again. And I was, yeah, we really left our mark, our cast.
Yeah, you literally did. You literally did.
But yeah, no coconuts, too.
No, no coconuts. So I had a bad feeling going into it. I was like, this isn't going to be good for me. So I'm going to change my game up a little bit. And, you know, I didn't play as much of the, like, Aussie game as I probably should have. And maybe it's just because I'm also getting old and maybe I didn't have the skills, the ability to. I don't know. But it's one of those things, like, I think that maybe character actors go through this where they, you know, you play the same type of person over and over again, and you get tired of that and you want to try and expand out and, like, do something different. So you, like, do a musical or you go to Broadway or something, and then everybody just doesn't want to see that. They want to see, like, you know, they want to see the cowboy.
That's a great comparison. So essentially what you're saying is the Aussie type for the first three seasons was you doing plays. And then for Game Changers, you're like, I'm going to do a musical.
Yeah.
You start singing and you're like, I don't know that the audience is eating this up as much.
No, I don't think they were. I think they were like, dude, you're tone deaf. Go back to doing what you're good at.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do you feel like you as a person are also a character? I'm just trying to wrap my head. I did this show one time and it was a mind fuck to be like, there's me, the TV character.
Yeah.
And I'm a little, and my, and it is me. I'm not trying to claim edit or anything like that. It is very much me, but it's also like a bit of a sweeter, more awkward, more growth edity version of me. That's the cards I was dealt and what happened, right?
Yeah.
And that's one time. But this has been a huge chunk of your life. So like, yeah, do you feel yourself slipping into the character versus like who you are? What is that like over four times going on this show, but as yourself?
It, you know, honestly, it's been great because like I said, that sort of journey of discovery, I unlocked something the first time in Cook Islands, a part of me that I hadn't really been able to ever explore. That young, you know, let's be stranded on a deserted island kid. And when I got the chance to finally do that, it felt so good and so natural. And it felt like something that was always in me and will always be in me. And to be able to explore that was, it was really uplifting and it felt really good. And I think that it was just developing a side of myself that I had always wanted to develop. So then going back and really like sinking into it and just getting more into the Ozzy character. It's actually maybe, you know, my name, I'm sure you know this, my name's Oscar, and I usually have, that's how I have been known up to that, you know, my survivor character is Ozzy. Whereas people, my family, friends that know me, for the most part, before Survivor, they call me Oscar, or, you know, people that I work with will call me Oscar. I naturally, when I introduce myself, unless I'm in like a Survivor setting or something, I introduce myself as Oscar. So in a funny way, like having that stage name, that character that lives in me, it can come out when I want it to, and I can dip into it when I want to, but I can also be this other person if I want to. And I don't know. I think there's other facets to my personality for sure, but the Ozzy character is, you know, it's become a huge part of my life. And
glad it's a positive.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
My friend, I talked to him about what the experience is like kind of going on a reality show, and he reflected back. He said it felt like deep character method acting in a way. So it's interesting to like hear you refer to the Ozzy character versus Oscar. I also did the show at 24, but I can't imagine. Yeah, it was obviously a much different experience for me. I mean, not necessarily negative, but just because it was such a more mixed bag. I think I just very much wanted to afterwards be in control and have agency over any narrative I was putting out afterwards. But I like your more positive attitude towards what this unlocked. And yeah, I wish I had embraced the nature a little bit more. I did go fishing though.
Yeah.
We had someone on our tribe who really wouldn't let everyone touch the fishing gear, but I did get to eventually go fishing. I wish that I had told this man to F off and just grab the fishing gear earlier.
Yeah.
I think that at 24, I didn't have that chutzpah.
Yeah, but now, I mean, so it's interesting you say that because you went through and had that experience where, you know, you maybe had some guy like mansplaining how to, you know, survive in the wild. And now and so now you've got the like firepower. If someone's trying to control something, another situation, you can draw on that experience and be like, nah, motherfucker, like I'm going to do this. Like,
yeah.
Like, why don't you back off?
I definitely learned. No, I definitely, listen, you learn stuff from being on the show. You learn stuff from the process of watching the show back. It's a lot of growth smushed into like a very intense year. We got so many questions when I said that you were coming on the podcast. So I want to keep asking my own questions, but I do want to sprinkle in some of these fan questions because, they were just so good. So if you sent in a question, thank you so much. If you don't hear your question, I'm so sorry. So we'll sprinkle them in and then we'll keep you know, we can keep, I have my own questions too still, but let's see. I like the way this is worded. We're going to start with A-N-E-W-R-V-R-D-L asks, as a loner surfer bro, was it difficult to fit in with your fellow castaways? I guess she viewed the Aussie archetype as a loner surfer bro. How do you feel about that classification of archetype? And do you, and if you do relate to it, how did you fit in with your other castaways?
You know, that's a pretty fair question, pretty fair assessment of who I am. I definitely do have a lot of loner qualities. Even with my good friends that I've known for many, many years, I'm pretty quiet in a group setting. I'm pretty, you know, reserved. You know, I have like moments where I can be exuberant and gregarious and have, you know, a lot of things to say, but my standard is like I'm pretty quiet. And, you know, I do like to get to know people on a one-by-one basis, but I also, something that continually plague me on Survivor is a lot of the people that I would play with, you know, I'd say at least more than half, I just don't care about. And I couldn't really fake wanting to know about them or care about them. Even being stranded on an island with them for a period of time. And I would really try to put in the energy to get to know people and really like connect with them. And I would, you know, do whatever I could to make those connections. But, you know, there's just certain people that it's just really hard for me to fake it. And, you know, I think that people did pick up on that in certain aspects. And so, I don't necessarily want to like just try to get along with people to try to get along, you know, for the sake of the game. And I know that's part of the game. And that's one of the reasons why I have a good, you know, I think that I don't have the strongest social game when it comes to Survivors, because genuinely, you know, when there's somebody that I'm like, just not interested in or don't have a connection with, and I try to make that happen, if it's not going to happen organically and I don't feel it, I'm just not going to push it, you know, and it's something that's hurt me in Survivor. And it's hurt me in my everyday life, you know, like to be honest, I wish I had a little more of that in me. And it's something that as I've grown older, it's been easier and easier to find those connections and find those bridges. But when I was 24, when I was, you know, 27, 28, I just really didn't care that much about other people. I was just kind of about myself and my adventure and like feeling good for me. And of course there was like the team and wanting to do well as a tribe, but I was also just like so just in the Aussie adventure.
I mean, I am probably more of a people pleaser naturally, so some of that attitude I'm a little jealous of. But there was one time when I may have pulled a producer aside and said, if you don't take me on a walk, which for the listeners means, you know, you go do a confessional, and let me vent about this person, I will yell at them and it will ruin everything. Yeah. And they walked me down to a camera and I just screamed into a camera about how much I couldn't stand this person in that moment and that context. Right. So it's a difficult thing, because it's one thing on when you're well fed and you have sleep in you to deal with people that you maybe wouldn't necessarily want to deal with. But when you're stranded and you're very tired and you're very hungry, you know, it can be a little bit more difficult to hear the same story again and again, or, you know, have someone mansplain fishing to you.
Oh, so. Exactly. And there is the beauty of Survivor. And that's what, you know, after a week of being out there and, you know, it really starts to get to you. And that's when a lot of times you see those fireworks happen.
Yeah. Cher Nati wants to know, viewers and jury members alike appreciate a good underdog story. Is there any way for anyone of Aussie's archetype to spin the story in a way that would appeal to those people? Nati from Israel. So this question is coming to us from Israel. How does your archetype, the Aussie archetype, also kind of appeal to the people who like an underdog?
I mean, I think it's pretty simple, honestly. The underdog story is kind of the story that I've always played. You know, I've always kind of been the underdog from the moment that Candace and Jonathan Penner stepped off the mat in Cook Islands. My tribe became the underdog, and we fought our way back to the final four, and you know, got second place, and Yule won it. And when that happened, like, there was really no choice. It was do or die. And if we didn't win that, those challenges, every single one of those challenges, you know, we would have been picked off one by one. If we had lost one more player, it would have been really difficult for us to make it. So from that point on, you know, I've always had a giant target on my back. And as we know, the bigger your target in Survivor, the less likely it is that you're going to be able to make it to the end and win the game. So I think that it's a pretty simple way of looking at it. Perhaps I'm missing something, but for me, I've always just had a massive target, and it's been so hard for me to, you know, deflect enough to make it, you know, far enough in the game that I've got have a real shot. So, you know, the one time I was able to do it, it just, the pressure was too much in South Pacific. And, you know, my chance at the massive underdog win, I just couldn't pull it out.
I like this next question. It's from Amiris Bates. Amiris Bates wants to know, Aussie's archetype is so physical, long hair, great at challenges, strong swimmer, etc. The typical physical stuff, like long hair. But also, he's mentioned that he's great at puzzles, and I feel like that gets overlooked. Are there any other elements of his game that he feels have been overshadowed by the physical parts?
You know, I wish that it was not the case. I wish that, you know, the physical, that there was much more to me than just a physical player. Yeah, I think I'm really good at puzzles, but, you know, I'm not good enough to win Survivor based on my puzzle prowess, as Sophie Clark beat me in South Pacific. The only thing that I've, you know, really I think the thing that often gets lost or overshadowed is the fact that, you know, when we're out playing the game and there's certain storylines that make it onto the screen, there's so many other little adventures and fun things that happen that I think that I really encapsulate that. You know, I like to go on these, you know, fun adventures and do these fun things that, you know, don't necessarily fit into the storyline that makes it to Survivor, because they're not directly related to, like, who's going to get voted out or what. So I think that, to me, is probably the biggest, is that there's so much that goes on outside of just things that the viewers see at home. And I do think that I have a lot of great experiences with a lot of people doing all sorts of stuff. It just no one's ever going to see that. And that's unfortunate to me, because there's some people that are really good at sitting around camp and just talking about, you know, their lives and getting to know everybody. And that's an important part of Survivor, but that to me was never really that fun. I really like to just be out and about, you know, whether it's like fishing or collecting coconuts or, you know, getting wood or, you know, searching for idols or just exploring the island, like whatever, you know, is going on, just outside of just sitting around camp. Cause, you know, you get a lot of that done. So
was there more like room to explore when in the older seasons, like Cook Islands and South Pacific? Do you feel like now the beaches are more restrictive to, like, you can't go past this point and stuff like that?
Yeah, I feel like in Cook Islands, we had a massive amount of space to explore. In we had a Yeah, I think that in Fiji, it's probably the least amount of space that we've had to explore. But, you know, there's still a lot of space, but, you know, in my past seasons, there's definitely a lot more space.
Anya Setziel says, Aussie literally is the archetype. Like, it's the Aussie archetype. So she agrees with us. So how does he feel about that?
Hey, I feel great about that. You know, I'm super happy to have carved out a space within the characters of Survivor, and to be compared to me and to have this sort of like benchmark set. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of what I've done. I'm proud of the way I played. You know, obviously, like any human being, there's lots of regrets and there's things that I could have done differently in every single season. But at the end of the day, you know, I always played the exact way I wanted to play, and I always kind of played the same. And I think that there's definitely room to expand on that archetype. I think there's probably going to be a young person, doesn't have to be a man. It could be a man or a woman that will come along that will be better than me, that will beat me, that will be better looking, better at fishing, better at everything. And I just hope that, you know, it's like, you know, what's that saying about standing on the shoulders of those that come before you? It's like, you know, hey, I'm here to have done something, and I hope that somebody does come along and take some of the lessons from the way I played and can apply them to future Survivor games and can really elevate that to another level. But, you know, maybe
Do you have a favorite Aussie archetype that came after you? Are you like, this guy? I really like this guy. Because there have been a lot of long-haired, handsome nature men that came after you. Are you like, I have a soft spot for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I always liked Joe until he turned into a damn QAnon Trump conspiracy theorist. You know, I still cannot believe that, like, somebody who I thought was just so, you know, upbeat and compassionate could possibly be spouting out all that all those lies and nonsense. So it wasn't someone like that, but, you know, Fabio was a good character. You know, I thought that he was more of the like surfer bro type, but hey, he won the game, so he was doing something right. And there's been a few others. And I just cannot quite wrap my head around their names. There's a guy that has like really great eyebrows and really white teeth and long hair. And he's like a boat captain. And
if you, the listener, knows who this great teeth, long hair guy is, tweet at us with great eyebrows. Very important.
Yeah.
To know great eyebrows. A lot of the questions we got wanted to know if you would play again.
Yeah, it's always so funny to me how anyone could ever even think that there would be a different answer to that. Like, I just don't get it. Like, even if I won the game three times in a row, I would always go back and play Survivor. I would always go back. And I love it. I love it so much. The only caveat is if Survivor was held in like China again, or somewhere that was like super dry and landlocked, like, maybe I would think twice about it, but...
So your only way you say no is if it's a landlocked season. Because you're talking to a fairly retired Survivor player. So we're coming at this from two different perspectives.
Yeah, I would definitely play again. And I just am always surprised that people think that I would answer any different way.
I like... You're so appreciative and positive about the show. It's... I want to say refreshing. I know a lot of people who go on the show are very thankful for the experience, but I don't think I've talked to someone who's quite as like holistically positive about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the things one of the things that drives me in my decision-making and has always driven me in my decision-making is, you know, I don't believe that I'm going to get another shot at life. I don't believe that I'm going to be able to come back and do this again. Like, I think this is it. I don't think there's anything else. I think that you got one shot to enjoy your life. I think that people often live their lives thinking that, like, they're going to somehow put a mark on humanity in a way that's going to be of some sort of, like, greater value. I think people put way too much value on themselves as people, you know, and I just would rather enjoy the moment, enjoy what's real in front of me. And Survivor really gave me a chance to do that. And it was hard. I had a lot of really hard realizations playing the game, and it made me have to grow up a lot. And, you know, the first season that I was on, there was a lot of chat rooms that were very hard to, you know, when you become, like, I guess, famous in a way, and you are exposed to all this hate that is prevalent on the internet, which, you know, it's deep and dark and, you know, full of trolls and disgusting, you know, energy. You just come to realize that, you know, it's not worth putting any energy into that negativity. And it's kind of like, I think I've come full circle. There was a time and a place where Survivor, you know, like you, I couldn't watch it because of the regret, you know, because I didn't win, because I didn't do the thing that I thought that I could do. I thought I was going to win the game a few times. And because I didn't do it, that pain, that hurt so bad, like that ego blow that just, like, you know, made me, it spurred growth. It made me have to accept the fact that, you know, sometimes you're going to set out to do something and you're going to fail, but at the end of the day, you got to pick yourself up and try again and do it again. And, you know, you just got to, I think that there's an interesting quote. I don't know who said it, but one of the ways of measuring success is by being able to fail without losing enthusiasm. And that's something that I've learned on Survivor. You know, I've failed countless times in front of millions and millions of people. And I don't want to lose my enthusiasm for life. And sometimes I get down on it, like, damn, I wish I had $1 million in the bank right now. Make my life a lot easier. But I also am totally happy with that experience of that sort of that type of failure.
That's beautifully said. And, you know, I don't want anyone to ever think that I'm, like, down on the show and I'm like, 'cause I didn't win. But I like that mindset because it's hard when you do it, even if, like, I didn't go into it thinking I was going to win the show, but it does get to a place, especially when you get to the end and you have a jury reflected back at you. I think it's a specifically difficult position to be in. I always think, like, the first boot, the boot before the merge, and then a losing finalist. I think those are the three hardest mentally to deal with. And I stand by that. And nothing I've heard, I mean, maybe if you're involved in some sort of scandal would probably be the harder thing. But other than that, like, I think it's just such a hard place mentally, because everyone else, it's like, oh, I would have won if my torch didn't get, you know, if I didn't get voted out. But when you get to the end and you have, you know, you're like, I did the thing. I climbed the mountain. Yeah. And a jury of people are like, yeah, but you didn't climb it well enough. It is a tricky thing. And so I like that mindset, and I will be thinking about that. Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah, but also, yeah. How long ago was it that you played?
5 years ago.
Yeah,
so I had a lot of therapy, so I'm a lot healthier than I was when I first got off the show.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that you know, if you take that 5 years, and the first time I played Survivor was, oh Lord, what was that now? 15, 16 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, about, you know, 15 years ago.
The amount of time that it's taken me to get to this point, it's been a long time. And it's been a lot of different goes at going on and, you know, trying to change things up a little bit, but still failing. So I think you'll get there. You'll definitely get there. And you're just at a point where, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, the journey doesn't end. It just, it keeps going.
Yeah, it's, I hope I can develop that mindset. I mean, I definitely think that I did grow a lot by quote unquote failing. I like that it's failure in quotes too, because it is losing a thing very publicly, but it's, you know, it's an arena in which 19 or of the 20 people or however many people there are, depending on the season, everyone but one person is going to quote unquote fail. I was curious about, so, you know, you got to be the fisherman, the climbing trees, but you also watched yourself be in a romance on national television, yes. Which I'm just like, because for 15-year-old me, you know, if you had been like, Hannah, what is love? I would pull up your jury speech in Micronesia and be like, this is what love is. Like, this was 15-year-old me watching this. So what is it? I have to know, like, what is it like watching that reflected back? The Aussie character falls in love.
I don't know. I mean, you could look up the definition of cringe and you might, you know, you might be able to fit that right in there. I am just joking. I fully felt those feelings. I let those feelings out. I wasn't afraid to let the world sort of see this vulnerable side. And I'm really happy that I did. It might have been a little bit misguided, might have been a little bit misplaced, but all the more reason, you know, I think that going through these experiences such as Survivor with a person and, you know, having these like really sort of primal desires come up, it's a little confusing. And I certainly felt very strongly about Amanda. And I certainly felt like things were potentially going to get, you know, go a certain way. But sometimes you can't control how things actually happen. And you might really love the idea of a person and love the idea of you being with that person and love the idea of loving that person. But, you know, sometimes, you know, your heart has a different idea and life gets in the way, you know, but it was embarrassing for sure to go back and watch that. But I'm also so grateful that there was that moment that I shared with the world, you know, because it was true and it was genuine.
That's the part I'm interested in, though. It's like, I know like love can be whatever, but my thing is like 15-year-old me would not foresee me getting to like podcast with you about watching that. I'm fascinated that like, there are millions of people like me. Like what I understand being in a relationship or, having moments of love, but having an audience for that seems so wild.
Yeah.
I know it's normalized with like The Bachelor and all this stuff now, right. But like, it's wild.
It was wild. And it was invigorating. It was like, I felt so alive. I felt so vulnerable. I felt so just, I mean, look, let's be honest. As everybody knows, I'm a pretty performative person. I'm an exhibitionist in a way. I like to show people who I am in more ways than one. So that opportunity, when it presented itself, I took it, and I wanted to talk about my feelings in those ways, because, you know, as we were talking before about me being sort of this loner type, you know, it's never really been that easy for me to just talk about my feelings and talk about like, you know, how, you know, what my emotions are and all these other things. Like I've been pretty guarded about that, but something about having the audience there and the cameras rolling, it's easier for me to do it in that way. It's almost like having it's almost like being in therapy in a way. So,
therapy that will then be broadcast to 15-year-old me.
Exactly.
It's just weird. I'm just so thankful that you were down to do this podcast, but I just find it so funny. I just like, just because it's the, you know, there's something special. I think I said this when Denise was on, about like the people you watch on the show before you're on the show and a little bit of the curtain falls. And, but then for Cook Islands people, it's like, even heightened a bit, because it's like, it was the thing. It was the first one. I remember I met Parvati on the season 40 red carpet, and I was like, this is part, like, it, Cook Islands people will always have a special place in my little teenage mind.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun for me. I like this question. Survivor 123456789 asks, what season theme would you most want to return for? I know what my, yeah.
I mean, I think that, I really like Edge of Extinction, just because I like that idea. I like the Redemption Island, just because I like that insurance policy.
I know what my answer would be, which is that I think they should do an All-Stars Brains Brawn Beauty. I would just love to be on like a nerdy tribe. I just think that would be fun. But you were saying your answer, if like a Redemption Island win your way back thing is too easy, what is the theme? I just love the idea. I think Brains Brawn Beauty might be my favorite of the Survivor themes.
Yeah. I think it would be a toss-up between some sort of an all-star season, just because I really do enjoy playing with seasoned players. But also, I think it would be really fun to have to go out on another, like a blood versus water. I think that would be a really cool experience to share with family.
Who would you bring? Would you bring your cousin? And also, does your cousin, in quotes, kick themselves for not taking up the opportunity?
No. I think my cousin actually made plenty of money and has had a great career for the last 15 years. He's been working his ass off doing all kinds of commercials. So I don't think he's ever, I think he feels super I think he feels just amazing about, having bestowed this incredible opportunity on me and really changed my life. It changed my life. So, if I was to go back out, I would probably take, my youngest sister. I think that she would really love to play. And she's really smart and got a great sense of humor, and she's really pretty. So I think that she would really do well on Survivor. And we actually I submitted her when they were casting for Blood versus Water. They asked me to submit a bunch of people, and she's one of the people that I submitted. They ended up going with, a different, totally different cast, but a Blood versus Water would be great. I would love to have another person in the family that could share the experience of Survivor with me.
Again, we're on different ends of the spectrum here, because I would feel too responsible if a family member had a bad experience.
Yeah.
I would feel like the weight of that would break me. Like if I ever went back and had a bad experience, it would stink, but I would live with that. If I brought a family member on and they had some sort of negative experience, it would hurt. But you're seeing it from, again, a much more positive thing. I like this one a lot. Bottle of Brum asked, what archetype would you classify as your villain or opposite of you? Am I the opposite of you? Is the nerdy girl your villain?
No. I think that we have a lot more in common than that. I think that my archetype is the opposite of me is the super masculine gym rat. I'm good at everything, and I'm going to control the tribe, and I'm going to I think that to me is the most off-putting of any of the characters that, and they always come through the pipes. There was a, I don't even want to say his name because I don't want to give him the kind of credit, but there was this player that used to talk so much.
I'll bleep it out. But now I want to know. I'll put bleeps over it.
Oh, I don't even remember when he played. I think his name was, and he was a Southerner from.
Okay. Yeah. And I think I remember his face.
He just is good looking guy, ripped, but just a gross person. Just a nasty, I'm sure he's a, right-wing Republican, kind of probably closet racist, just all around gross person. So And I don't necessarily have anything against like that type, you know, Republicans and conservatives, but the way that he just went on and on about people, it would make fun of people and were just like a bully and just had that like that air, that arrogance and that obvious like didn't have much going on upstairs. I think to me that would be the complete opposite of everything that I stand for.
Well, on the opposite end of that question, Bottle of Brum also asks, who's one person you never got to play with that you would have liked to play with / ally with? I like that question. Bottle of Brum, thank you for a couple really good questions.
Yeah, that's a really cool question. I would have loved to play with... people ask me this question. I never think... I need to like have like a yearbook of all the Survivor players in front of me so I can just like.
It's a lot. There's a lot. Are you still watching season to season even?
You know, I've missed a lot of seasons in the past because like you, like there is a certain amount of trauma involved in watching the show. I watched season 40 because, you know, I know pretty much everybody on there. So it was really cool to see everybody that you know and everybody that you've like, that I've played with, like how they play, like all the people. I really enjoyed that season a lot. It kind of like reinvigorated my love of Survivor. So I thought like, okay, maybe I'll go back and like rewatch my old seasons and see, but I haven't done it yet. So, but to answer the question, I think it would be really fun to play with Richard Hatch. Just because I love his personality and his sort of flamboyant kind of like no fucks given. I also really enjoy Tyson. I like the way that he played the game.
He's Natalie, intimidatingly funny.
Yeah, Natalie's a really I look up to her as a physical player, and she's also like pretty cool, and I love her accent. There's Nicaragua, that, and I only am bringing this up because somebody, we were talking about this the other day. There was a player named Nyanka. She was awesome. I had a crush on her, and I really liked the way I just thought she was so hilarious. And
Nyanka, if you're listening, Ozzy, are you asking out Nyanka on this
podcast? Oh yeah, for sure, definitely. If you're listening, Nyanka.
There were a couple questions of people asking you out or to marry you. So I'm so sorry for those listeners. Nyanka is the one being asked out.
Well, here's the thing. Like anyone who's ever that doesn't know me and is trying to, you know, saying marry me, like, trust me, you do not want to get anywhere near. Like I'm bad news. Bad news, ladies and gentlemen out there.
I don't know. One of the people who asked is a good friend of mine, and she's wonderful. So. I like this question. Chrissy Hupf, there's a P and then an F, asked, was he aware of the character they wanted him to be, or did he just be himself?
I mean, people always assume, I don't understand. People assume that we are like pushed into these certain types of characters, and it's just not how, I didn't have that experience at all. The producers never once told me act this way, be this way, do this ever. I don't know if they did that to anybody. I just didn't have that experience. I just was the person that I was, and I played certain things up for my own benefit.
And you won a car because of it.
And they were like,
you're just so great. Here's a car.
I did do that. So no, there was never any pressure to do anything, you know, at all. I think that I just was given advice that, you know, I often give people that are trying out for the show. And that's, you know, if you're going to be on camera, try and be as try and emote as much as you can. Like, really, like, if you're going to feel something, like, really feel it. I don't think I did that good of a job of that. I think going back, I wish I had been more, I wish I had been more honest. I wish I had talked a little more shit. Maybe not like in a super negative way, but I think there was a lot of,
you know, the classic talking shit in a positive
way. Well, not necessarily, but just not like in a bullying, yeah. like There's certain ways you can do it.
We wish you had been more honest into the camera. But come on, you're telling me that you weren't emoting when Amanda killed that shark, and you were like, a girl like that, that's really attractive to a guy like me. I remember that emotion.
Wow. Wow.
Trying to freak you out.
I do.
What a fan I was, or am.
Yeah.
I like this question because it also ties into one I got a lot. Lincoln guy. I'm butchering these names. 85 asked, how have the challenges changed over time to benefit / hinder an Aussie type? And more specifically, I got a couple of this. What do you think of the old fire challenge? There are a couple games that you may have won if the fire challenge had the Final Four fire had been a thing when you played.
Yeah, I mean, God, I wish the fire challenge had happened on South Pacific. That would have been amazing. But also, I just totally blew that challenge. Like, I had that puzzle in the bag, and I second-guessed myself, and I just, by my, the 100 days that I had been on Survivor up to that point just came crashing down on me and blanked out my mind. So, I have no one but my own fucked-up mind to blame for that. And I don't think the challenge, I think the challenges are, if anything, the challenges maybe have been dumbed down a little bit over the course of, you know, as the Survivor, as Survivors progress. I think that's probably just due to boring stuff like budgetary concerns. So I don't necessarily think that they've hindered or maybe they've just gotten a little bit easier. Like, I really like the really long, the final challenge, the final four, final three challenge. Final four challenge, I think, is incredible. And I think the longer, the better, with more obstacles, more, puzzles. Like, that's truly a great part about Survivor. So I'm not sure if that answers the question.
It does. I did genuinely, even if it wasn't maybe my favorite part of Survivor, just as a person out there, I was in awe. Like, when you walk into a challenge and they have built this sort of adult jungle gym, it's hard not to be completely in awe of, like, what the team does, how they shoot it even. Like, when you're around camp, it's like smaller camera crews, but just a wall of cameras for these challenges and just the mechanics that go behind it, you know, are really impressive. And like, for each of these podcasts, I've watched a bit of highlights of each person. Even though obviously I'm familiar with the show, because I've seen it all since season 14, a lot of your highlights are you doing challenges, which is really funny to me because that's not what a highlights reel of me would be.
It's
a lot of challenge, like incredible challenge prowess.
And just to piggyback on that, you know, I wish that there was a little more, you know, I wish I was at least a little more interesting off of the challenge, just in my confessionals or just in the tribals or whatever. I think that I played it way too safe, and I haven't like unleashed the things that I'm actually thinking. And if I ever do play again, that's something that I would definitely change, is I would be much more cavalier with my thoughts and feelings and emotions.
I like that. I feel like less fucks giving confessional Aussie will be a fun thing for the fifth time.
The fifth
show. I like this question, and we will wrap up soon, but there are just so many great, like, everyone got really excited. Adam Fowler asked, what's something most fans don't know about you? I know you're big into sci-fi. This guy knows you, maybe. What's another hobby of yours someone wouldn't guess from looking at you?
That's a good question.
Thank you, Adam,
thank you. That's great. Yeah, no, science fiction, reading science fiction is almost like a drug to me. Like, I probably spend too much time with my nose buried in a book. I think another thing that maybe not a lot of people realize about me is that I'm a really good cook.
What dish is your specialty?
I don't have a specialty. I'm pretty good. I think I can cook most things. I think I'm pretty damn talented when it comes to, you know, sort of an overall general understanding about how to put ingredients and flavors together. I really enjoy it. It's so much fun to me. I love growing vegetable. I love going to the farmer's market. I love, you know, getting, you know, shopping at my, you know, local, you know, shopping at local farmer's markets and, you know, getting a lot of cool ingredients and putting them together.
Do you get recognized a lot still, like out at the farmer's market?
At the farmer's market, yeah, it happens occasionally, but, you know, I always go to the same one. So usually people just, I just know a lot of people there just from the neighborhood. So once I've been recognized once or twice by these people that are always frequenting the certain place, like, you know, it doesn't keep happening per se. But I've also, you know, people do know this about me, but I think my love of cooking comes from working in the restaurant business for so long and being around such amazing world-class chefs for the last, you know, 15 years of my life. But, you know, I'm a sommelier as well. So I have spent a lot of time studying wine.
You probably don't know this, but I got you name checked my season. Jay from my season, there was, I believe, a moment that aired. I said the Peruvian Aussie as he was walking down the beach. So your name was mentioned by me a season before you would become a changer of the game on Game Changers.
Wait, but is he a boat captain?
No. Oh. He's not a boat captain. He's not the boat captain you were thinking about.
He's not the guy. I mean, I should have known that you would know that.
Yeah. But he was my reference point for, like, look, I have the Aussie type on this season. M. Cardona wants to know his favorite season he played and why. And then she included the emoji heart smiling with like the three hearts around it. So thank you, M. Cardona. What was your, you played four freaking times.
Yeah.
What was the best one?
I feel like South Pacific was my strongest season. I feel like I was the most, although I wasn't able to control a lot of the game, I was the most in control of how I came across and the things that I did and the risks that I took and, you know, just kind of like throwing it all out there and doing as the best job I possibly could at the time. So I had the most fun on that season, maybe partially because at least a week and a half of that, I was by myself on Redemption Island.
Completely, I was going to say.
Cycling
this kind of season. Well, people wanted to know, like, can the Aussie archetype win? And it seems like we watched Chris win Edge of Extinction. It seems like the Aussie archetype does best when you can muscle your way back into the game, whether that's as a guy or like Natalie being a strong, she's not exactly the Aussie archetype, but she is a physical threat and was able to, you know, win her way back in. It seems like your type does best with this sort of sports games return.
Yeah. You know, that is true. And I would love to develop more of you know, the social and strategic part of my game. If I ever do get to play again, that's something that I would work on. But yeah, it is a little bit hard for me to see people like Chris do exactly what I meant to do and was never able to do.
Listen, if you ever go back, you just text me first. I have many flaws, but I never relied on my clear athletic ability. So maybe I can remind you of some of the other things you can rely on.
That would be great.
I mean, I had it. I just didn't use it because I, like, you know, I don't want to show off.
Of course not.
I was playing it down, you know? I mean, like, could I have swept every challenge? Obviously. Did I want to be that person? Like, no, I don't want to. I wanted everyone to feel good about themselves in terms of my athletic ability.
Of course.
Could I have stole, if I had been able to get the fishing gear away from the man who was guarding it, would I have caught all the fish? Like, obviously. Yeah. I'm basically the Aussie type that held back. So,
and you were what I should aspire to be the next time around.
You can lose at the finals with less votes.
Yeah.
Thank you to all the fans who like tweeted and Instagrammed in questions. It was an overwhelming number of really great questions. If I didn't get to your question, please continue when I announce different people coming on the podcast. Please continue to send in questions. Hopefully I'll get to everyone's. I tried to, if I didn't get to your question specifically, tried to cover it in some way throughout the podcast. We're going into season 41. Will you be watching? Will you be watching the shortened Survivor season? There will be less days that they spend on an island.
You know what? I will. I'm gonna give it a go. I think that just like a lot of other people, Survivor players and those that have just been enjoying Survivor, binging Survivor in this pandemic, I'm fiending a little bit. I really am, and I'd love to see what twists happen, and I just. You know, I'd love to just relive the experience a little bit. And I could use a little bit of escapism. And I think that Survivor is, I hope that it is as good as I remember it. I hope that there's a great cast. I hope they kick ass. I hope Survivor keeps coming back. If not for the selfish reason that, you know, maybe season 50, I'll be able to come back. Who knows?
Is there any last things you want to say about the Aussie archetype, which I'm so glad we're not calling you loner surfer dude or hot nature man. I don't know why hot nature man sounded.
I appreciate that. 100%. I appreciate it.
Hot nature man. That's how 14-year-old me would have described.
Yeah.
But we're calling it the Aussie archetype. Are there any other things you want to say about the Aussie archetype? This quote unquote character you played for 15 years on television and that other men and women continue to fit into?
Just that, you know, if there's people out there listening that ever do get a chance to, they get blessed enough to play Survivor, is just really enjoy your experience. Enjoy the whole damn experience. Don't focus too much on winning because most people are not going to win. But if you have enjoyed your journey, then you're going to look back fondly at your memories. So that's the only thing I have to say to that. And, that's something that it's a lesson that it's easy to preach to everybody, but it's also something that, you know, it's the way that I try to live my life every single day. So, and it's not easy. It definitely is not easy. It's a hard road to walk.
No, I love the place you're in. It's a very aspirational place of, it seems like a healthy mindset to what the experience can be, whether or not you win or lose. And before we do the final wrap up, where can people find you?
Oh yes. Well, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter, and you can also find me on OnlyFans.
We got some questions about OnlyFans.
Oh, yeah?
What is it like coming from a family show and then doing OnlyFans? I just kind of want to know. What's the response like?
Look, the response is for the most part, is overwhelmingly good. There's some haters on Twitter and there's some haters on Instagram and whatnot. And I understand that. I really do. But I also just don't buy into the puritanical version of life that some people want to live. You know, where did we come from? Let me ask you that. You know, we all came from two people having sex. And I think that the more that we appreciate,
if this is a shock to you, the listener, that that's where you came from.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's been revealed.
Yeah. I think that we have as a country, you know, we were founded by these puritanical, the Puritans, and we've been repressing sexuality for way too long. And the fact that violence gets glorified in the way that it does, and yet sex gets repressed, I think that it's the reason why we have so many problems. So I just want to enjoy people and show people, you know, the chance to explore your own sexuality is something that you need to take the journey with yourself. And there's so much to, as a hetero man that's grown up in a society that's told me that, if you wear pink, you're gay. I just think it's so toxic. And it's taken me a long time to get to the point where I'm comfortable enough with my own sexuality to explore it with people. And I just invite everybody along for the ride and along for the journey. And, it's something I am. The decision to do it took me a long time. But at the end of the day, again, I want to be able to look back on my life when I'm an old man and say, I just did everything that I wanted to do, and I enjoyed every experience, and I lived it to the exact absolute fullest that I possibly could. So it's a chance for you to come along and have some fun, really.
On that topic, Spectrum Sempra Aurora's Atlas said, I am dying to know, do the ladies he hooks up with on OnlyFans watch Survivor? They're dying to know, so I'll give in to their death wish.
That's a great question. And yeah, that's, part of, I think, my allure is that I have, I have this amazing reality TV archetype that has superseded me, and I have a reputation that precedes me. And it's provided, people want to know, if I was capable of doing all these things in the jungle, what else am I capable of?
Thank you. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Hannah Lil Nesson, or TikTok. That's the most adventure I'm having. But, it's got to be a sex positive podcast, because that seems like the better way to live. But truly, thank you for taking the time. Did any of my reminiscing on my 14-year-old self, is that weird for you?
No, not at all. I've been there. I have, I remember being a 14-year-old as well. And some of the memories that I have, they've helped to form who I am today. So I'm just really grateful for the opportunity to talk to you. And it's been really great. I enjoyed your character on the shows, and I've the times that we've been able to talk and hang out at different events, I've always enjoyed. So I knew that I was going to have a good time speaking with you today.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, we got to hang out a little at the season 40 premiere, right? It was one of the last events before the COVID year started. And it was really fun. It was a great time. Thank you so much. If you liked this podcast, tweet at either one of us. Let us know what your thoughts were. And I'll see you next time, listener, or you'll hear me next time in your ear while you're driving to work or cooking dinner, or I don't know. What is the listener doing? What does the listener do when they listen to this podcast? You're folding laundry, teaching your kids arithmetic, whatever you're doing. Thank you for listening to Just My Archetype while you do it. And thank you, Ozzy, for being just a dream guest. My teenage self would, if I ever get to travel back in time and I play my teenage self one thing, I will play her this podcast and she will melt. So thank you so much. And I'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye.